Good morning, everybody, and thank you for making time for our March quarterly report. I'll go through this pretty quickly, and I'll try and get to our question and answer session, because that certainly seems to be the more useful time for everybody, rather than listening but participating in the call. So this quarter for us is, I'd have to say, a very good quarter, but in some ways a workmanlike quarter in terms of just delivering on the guidance and putting the building blocks in place to deliver on the guidance that we've laid out for the full year. As we've been ramping up, you'll know every quarter is a record for us, for a company that's growing as smartly as we are. And so in this instance, ROM coal production at 5.7 million tonnes for the quarter certainly is the high watermark for us thus far, at 21% period-on-period improvement and 44% on a year-to-date basis improvement. Saleable coal production, again, our highest ever at 5.3 million tonnes for the quarter, 28% up period-on-period. Coal sales consistent with ROM production at 5.5 for the quarter, up 48% based on the period-on-period comparison and 53% on a year-to-date basis. The ramp-up at Maules Creek, I know everyone will be keen to see how that's going, is proceeding very, very well, so very pleased with progress there. 2 million tonnes of ROM for the production certainly sees us deploying the extra equipment that we've got on the ground at the right rate, and as many as you'll know, a lot of that equipment's on the ground basically at the end of last calendar year, so we're certainly proceeding at the right rate with that new gear on the ground. The expansion to 10.5 is certainly in train, and I'll talk a little about that later, but we expect that productive capacity to be on the ground about January of 2017. As far as our full-year guidance for saleable coal, our guidance, we're just reiterating that at this point in time, at 19.5 to 20.1 is the guidance we gave back in December of last year, and certainly we think that we'll be certainly at the right end of that range. Cost guidance, I know this is a production report, but cost guidance we get a lot of questions on, so we'll certainly try and deal with some of that. We're now expecting for the full year 2016 to be about 57, and we can talk about that a little bit later on. Just to highlight those managed numbers just for the sake of the report, 5.66 million tonnes for the quarter at the ROM coal production level, managed obviously, versus 4.7, certainly 21%, a very nice improvement. 5.3 for the saleable coal again, versus 4.1, and the total sales, as I mentioned, 5.5 versus 3.741, and the results of sales we can talk about a little bit further on. As far as the quarter goes and safety, it's certainly nice to see our trend of improvement resume. We certainly had a little pause on that earlier in the year, and so we've been redoubling our efforts to make sure that we've resumed that trend of improvement. And whilst we're managing the behaviours and the instances as they come, it really is the trend that we're focusing on, and that's nice to see an improvement once again. Coal sales themselves, this has been a pretty good quarter for us, I'd have to say. And our met coal split increasing based on the previous quarter, now at 15%, and you'll start to see this improve over the coming quarters. And certainly from looking from an outlook perspective just on the next quarter, that's more likely to be closer to 20% for the last quarter of the year, given the success that we're having in getting trial shipments for metallurgical coal away. And as we'll talk about, price improvements obviously around the corner in that regard as well. As I say, Maules Creek is certainly performing very nicely. The quality of the coal is receiving a very warm reception in the marketplace, and particularly pleasing is the improved met coal characteristics that the coal is exhibiting and the response that we're getting from the market for that coal. Obviously, pre this most recent settlement for the semi-soft pricing, we've got an average of $61.77 US for the quarter. We certainly expect that to be better for this next quarter, based again, as I say, this recently settled price, and certainly combined with the increasing proportion of sales that we're making into the met coal market, this next quarter should see us getting closer, as I say, to 20% of our total volume for the quarter. The Maules Creek Thermal is also well received, and certainly we're opening the door to new customers and new sales all the time, which is very, very positive for us. 8% premium is a little bit better than the last published premium just on the Maules Creek coal, so the underlying demand for the quality end of the coal spectrum certainly is seeing us deriving prices better than expected, for Maules Creek coal, and in fact that's also dragging up our Narrabri sales, which generally for the straight thermals are achieving about a 4% premium. It obviously doesn't have the energy of Maules, but it's certainly got the low ash, which is what people are paying the extra for. The average for the quarter for us at 51.56 compares favourably to the average just of the index at $50.46. As I say, the reception of the coals receiving the market has certainly been very good, and we want to see that continue on. But it gives us some leverage for our negotiations now to be talking about the starting point of our sales are really all about premiums now, not really about the index itself as much. On to the mines. Narrabri has certainly been continuing to run pretty hard, and as you saw for the calendar year 15, we certainly rounded out a high watermark point there at 8 million tonnes, and that run rate certainly has continued. In this quarter, we did a little bit less than what we did in the previous quarter, but we're going through an area of some variable ground conditions. As you know, there's a section in each of these panels that do this, and this quarter was the period in which that panel encountered that area. But at 2 million tonnes, or a bit over 2 million tonnes for the quarter, we're certainly running pretty hard. You know, annualised 8 million tonnes per annum certainly puts us at the top end of the spectrum for longwall mines in the country. Saleable coal production for the quarter at 2.1 was very solid, and sales for the quarter actually really good at 2.33 million tonnes for the quarter. So that's certainly a nice increment to 42% over the previous corresponding period. Guidance for the mine certainly going to be in the 6.6 to 6.8 million tonnes range. And as you know, we've got our longwall changeout coming out at the end of May, so mid to the end of May, which will see us back into production sort of at the end of June. The project for the expansion of Narrabri to the 400 metre face is going really well, on schedule and on budget, which is very good to see. And look, this project's going to come on in the first half of next year, so we look forward to the improvements. As we say, that's going to bring on an extra, in order of about 750,000 tonnes per annum in annual production over and above what we're achieving at the moment. And we do expect significant cost reductions in the range of $3 to $4 per tonne off the back of that expansion. Maules again, look, proceeding really well. I think the key points there is our guidance. We're happy with the 7.6 in that order of magnitude for the mine. And the equipment, as I said before, for the ramp up to 10.5 will be on the ground and productive around January 2017. So we'd expect the second half of the financial year 17 to be exhibiting a run rate about the 10.5 million tonnes per annum, just for your modelling purposes. On to the other open cuts, really good performance right across the board here, I'd have to say. Tarrawonga has been having an excellent year, both on production and also on efficiency, and certainly this quarter was no difference in that regard. So sales have been pretty strong, but you know, certainly ROM coal production at 576,000 tonnes for the quarter has been very good. Rocglen performance has also been very, very solid, very pleasing to see that at 362,000 tonnes of ROM. Certainly much better than we managed in the budget, and that's nice to see that change. Werris, as you know, always comes home with a wet sail, and that's going to be no different this time, although the quarter itself was actually pretty solid, 613,000 tonnes for the period. Across the board, I think all these mines are actually behaving really nicely and responding pretty well to cost reduction efforts right across the group, whilst, of course, every extra tonne we get out of Maules and we get out of Narrabri are coming out at cost levels below the average of the group, and of course bringing our costs down. These three mines are also responding very well to cost reduction initiatives, and we see that continuing. Vickery project is proceeding really well. A lot of work going on here in this project, just in terms of preparation for submission in June, July of an EIS. The EIS is based on 10 million tonnes per annum, so as everybody knows, the project's already approved 4.5 million tonnes per annum, but the 10 million tonne level is where we've modelled this up to, and we think we can submit an EIS that'll be sympathetic to a 10 million tonne case. Certainly plenty of gating procedures that we've gone through in terms of interception with sensitive agricultural land and water and so on. These have all been positively received with the government, so this work all remains on track. And as you know, timing for Vickery would certainly be after Maules Creek is fully ramped up, absent any material change in the market, but I think it's best to think about it in terms of 2019-2020. At a corporate level, cost reductions, as I say, continue to be very positive. So we are looking at this point in time as being $4 down on our last year's run rate at $61. So that's a very positive outcome for us across the group. I think we finished the quarter at 58, sorry, the half at 58. We said that there'd be $1 to $2 based on this. And in order to do 57 for the full year, we're actually hitting the top end of that guidance for the second half. So that's certainly a solid achievement, and we look forward to bringing the last quarter of that home to underpin that sort of cost reduction. As you know, we do carry a small portion of hedging for those fixed and fixed price commitments that we have, and as the profile of it, exploration expenditure, as you would expect at this time of the cycle, very modest. So I'll end it there, other than to say that overall, look, we're really pleased with the way the business is performing. Of course, the market has continued to be challenging, as everybody knows, but certainly the business and our teams are behaving in a way that they're maximising every opportunity we have in front of us. The key things, I think, just in terms of the run home to the balance of the year, again, you'd be looking for another 5 million tonne plus quarter. There's no doubt about that. We have the change out coming, but we can sell coal right through that period with Narrabri, with what will be its enlarged stockpile footprint there, which is very good. The met coal sales, as I say, more like 20% in this remaining quarter of the year, consistent with the outperformance we've had in met coal penetration into the market out of Maules Creek, which should see us round out production numbers, as I say, within that range, probably at the upper end of that range, for the total volumes just under the 20 million tonne mark. But overall, a very good quarter and a good underpinnings for the balance of this financial year. So I'll hand back to you, operator, and we might get the questions lines opened up.
Thank you. And as a reminder to our audience, if you do wish to ask a question, you'll need to press 0 followed by 1 and wait for your name to be announced. And your first question will come from the line of Brendan Fitzpatrick from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Hello. Looking at the costs, could we confirm that it sounded like all the assets were responding well to the cost-out initiatives, but just confirm that each asset has improved on unit costs since the first half? And could you advise what Aussie dollar assumption you've made when targeting the $57 a tonne level?
Yeah, thanks, Brendan. And just for everyone's knowledge, I've got the usual crew here, Jamie, Kevin, and Ian here as well. Look, on costs, we're assuming currency remains the same, so we're not hedging our costs other than where we've got some fixed capital commitment, as you know. The revenue line I've spoken about in terms of the small hedging profile we have. So we're assuming that the currency you see today, 76 cents, continues through that period, and that underpins the cost estimate that we've got. Broadly, this is really about fuel, you know, as it relates to the FX. I mean, the rest of our costs are largely Aussie dollar costs. So that's a relatively easy estimate for us to make, and certainly at this point in time, we feel confident about putting that guidance out there. As far as the mines go, all the mines have been responding really well. So cost reductions have been achieved right across the board, some better than others, and But you can imagine that you know, at this point in time, we want to see progress across all the business, not just the two bigger assets, but the three smaller assets are performing very, very well and all continue to be, as is importantly this time, cash flow positive.
All EBITDA positive.
Great, thanks very much. And just one final confirmation that all the cost achievements that have been made are sustainable. There's nothing that would unwind at any point.
Brendan, we're not doing anything short-term here. We don't see the need. That would be the last resort lever we consider that you'd want to pull if you had to take some short-term initiatives such as higher grading, say, for instance. We haven't done any of that.
Great. Thanks very much, Paul.
And your next question will come from the line of Peter O'Connor from Shaw and Partners. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Paul. And congratulations on another good result. I just want to shift gears and think bigger picture and just ask you about business risk. And I specifically want to focus on a company overnight that went into Chapter 11. I don't want you to give me thoughts on what they're doing or not doing, but I just want to understand, in your chain of infrastructure or sales, is there any impact from anything that may happen in that area, be it take-or-pays at NCIG and the socialising effect of costs, or on the rail as well? And I know not all of their assets are in New South Wales, and I know they're profitable in New South Wales. I just wanted to see were there any risks there, and then I have a follow-up on NCIG as well.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, thanks, Peter. Look, we think we've had a pretty solid quarter, and we're looking forward to the run home into the end of the year. Look, risk, you know, this is, I suppose this is no news to anybody, and I don't, as you are not wanting to do, and I don't want to do either, focus particularly on them as a company, but look, this has been, you know, an evolving but very open and visible migration, if you like, from the state that which they've been into Chapter 11. I think that's not a surprise to anyone that that's emerged. As it relates to us, there's no real impact to us, certainly, that we could imagine on the line, on the rail line. It's a logical question to ask about the port, NCIG in particular, obviously. But also we've looked at that closely, and we do through the eyes of our shareholding and directorships of NCIG, so we do look at that very closely. And we feel quite comfortable about the position there. The mines that feed NCIG, or that NCIG is dependent on continued business, are pretty robust, and the relationships, as we understand it, between NCIG and those organisations are at that level, so not at the level that's gone into Chapter 11. So if you know what I'm saying. So look, at that level we feel pretty comfortable. We think the risk of socialisation there is pretty minimal, so I'm not really worried about that. You know, not talking about them particularly, but the thematic more generally, as you know, we are growing, and as you know, we need some more port. And this subdued market, which has seen the likes of companies going to the Chapter 11, has been opportune for us to secure that extra capacity at the ports for our continued ramp up at prices, you know, that are very compelling. So you'll see benefits from us in the future in that regard.
Just to follow up then, Paul, on NCIG, and thinking through your cost reductions holistically, and you've talked about what's happening at the mine level, what can happen at NCIG, and I'm thinking now about the funding of NCIG and how that works, when does that retire, or is that amortised, and what is the uplift in cost? Because it seems that there's a significant benefit at some point, maybe it's too far in the future, from a cost out at NCIG as interest gets, or debt is retired. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, look, I'll make a couple of remarks. I'll hand over to Kevin, because Kevin sits on the board of NCIG and can talk about it through our eyes, but having the benefit of that position. Look, as you know, that's obviously a business which was, you know, in substance, fully debt-funded. You know, I mean, there obviously were some other interesting instruments there, but it was debt-funded in the end. As debt is repaid, equity will emerge, as you know. And the vast majority of the cost we pay per tonne is financing cost in nature. The OPEX is pretty minimal. So as you say, as that burden of funding is paid down over time, then those costs will also come down. I mean, it's a fantastic asset, and we're very pleased to have our position there. From an expansion capacity perspective, it is by far the most compelling terminal through which extra capacity would go. So I don't think the economics of T4, you know, look very interesting at all relative to the incremental cost of expanding NCIG. So strategically, this is the right place for us to be. And as we ramp up further, you'll see us put more time through it. But funding, Kevin, you want to make a few remarks on funding?
Yeah, look, it's a NCIG operates almost on a cost recovery method. So as those costs come down over time, as debt is retired out of NCIG, then you would expect to see the charge come down. You'd also expect to see with increasing tonnes, and I'm not talking about today or tomorrow, but probably in a year or two's time, or 2 years, 3 years' time, you'll see more tonnes go through NCIG because of the attractiveness that Paul talks about. Probably the last point that I want to make about NCIG is that when you look at the quality of the assets that provide the tonnes into NCIG, there's very little risk of socialisation of loss. You've got, in effect, you've got Hunter Valley Energy Coal with BHP. You've got Rio Tinto there out of Hunter Valley Operations. You've got us out of Maules Creek and the Gunnedah Basin. You've got Moolarben with Yancoal, which is quite a strong provider. And you've got Wilpinjong out of
Peabody.
You've also got a bit of Centennial in there. And the operations that are providing that coal are very well positioned on a cost curve. So from my perspective, when I look at NCIG in the mix of Whitehaven, I'm pretty comfortable with where that price is going to be over time and probably where price is going to be. You know, contrast that to more recent experience in Queensland, and it's a chalk and cheese conversation. It really is a chalk and cheese conversation, both in terms of quality of assets, quality of positioning on the cost curve, and again, these are assets that are in production where the costs are well known, with established markets and quality operators, not a business that's trying to, and that's not to say anything about somebody else, but there's some other people in Queensland who are trying to get mines up at the top of the market, and then the timing of the market beat them.
If we've got a follow-up to ask, what is the rate at NCIG, and is there a debt repayment profile you can loosely guide us to, or a trend? Is it just a straight line amortization, or how does it work?
Oh, it's pretty much amortized. If you look at the business, it's got a set of reserves behind it attached to the mines, and you're required to provide those reserve statements to NCIG. And it amortizes over or matches to those asset lives, effectively. So it's not a straight-line amortization over a 10-year period or a 15-year period. It's a rolling series of debts that with different maturity profiles.
Okay. But and it's current run rate?
Its capacity at the moment is mid-60s, I'd say, and I think they're bumping up against that. But it's effectively what you buy is you buy annual capacity, and you pay for your annual capacity, regardless of whether you use it. So in our case, we're incentivized to send all those tons through that we can. We get real benefits on rail usage. We get real benefits on planning and scheduling. There are lots of really good things that come from having an extended period for cargo assembly at NCIG that is not manifested cleanly in the headline rate that you pay for port and loading. It's I look at it and say it's a great asset.
Right, thanks so much.
And I do believe, you know, they've really just started. That asset has really just come into commercial operation as well. So there are opportunities there. I think you'll see emerge over the next year or three, which are all around how do you apply a little incremental capital or operate a little more smartly and get a better outcome.
Yep.
Thank you.
And your next question will come from the line of Andrew Hodge from Macquarie. Please go ahead.
Thanks, guys. Two questions I had. The first one was just I've seen that the Hunter Valley Access Undertaking is meant to be expiring on June 30th, and I was just curious about how you guys saw that in terms of changing some of your below rail rates going forward. After that for the 2017 financial year. And the second one is obviously given the operational success you guys have had at Narrabri and the talk about how many people have been looking in the data room and Anglo's assets, I'm curious about whether or not you guys had looked at them yourselves and I guess compared them operationally to yourself.
Look, the access undertaking is in the sensitive stages of finalisation, so I probably wouldn't prefer to talk about it too much other than to say that there's nothing to fear from those arrangements concluding. I suppose the bigger question, which is not something we can explore too much on this call, but more like a cup of coffee type conversation, which is what happens to ARTC more generally over time, and I'm talking about privatisation potentially at some form in the future. I think that's probably where our focus is on ARTC and just making sure that we have all our arrangements in place ahead of any framework like that changing. As far as Narrabri goes, I mean, Narrabri has got plenty of upside and we're continuing to explore all the avenues to continue to optimise that. The 400-metre face extension obviously is a very compelling investment for us, but there's plenty more that we can still do at this site to expand that further. Maules, as you know, has got plenty left to go. You know, our first priority, rather than exploring data rooms at this point in time is to make sure that we deliver on all the organic growth that we've got within our pipeline. Of course, we look at these opportunities from time to time as they present themselves, and there's some interesting assets that come on the market, and there's a lot of less interesting assets on the market currently. So I think it's just really just a watching brief, do your homework along the while. But in the meantime, you know, you'd have to have a damn good asset, you know, to bring online rather than getting more tons out of Narrabri and Maules Creek.
So just to clarify then, so have you guys looked in any of the data rooms or any of the assets up for sale?
Oh, I want to add to that conversation, Andrew. I don't think there's... We're certainly not planning to do anything in particular, so if that's your answer, that might be helpful.
Okay. All right. Thanks, guys.
And your next question will come from the line of Paul Young from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Hi, gentlemen. How's it going? Two questions. First one is on your guidance, Paul. You mentioned, I think, there that for the full year that you hope to be at the better end or the preferred end of that guidance range. This is a bit of minutiae here, but if I look at what you've achieved year to date and the fact that Narrabri is going through a longwall change, you've got to pedal pretty hard or pull down a lot of ROM stocks to hit the bottom end of guidance on my numbers. So just curious about your coal stocks at year end, 1.7 million tonnes, where's that located? Is that mostly ROM stocks? Can you pull that down? Just sort of give us an indication of how you manage your stockpiles. That's the first question.
Yep, yeah, thanks, Paul, and we're well, thank you. Thus far, if we look at obviously the benefit of our portfolio now is that we've got Maules, you know, running hard, and even though we've got a change out coming, you know, Narrabri is also running hard. So building stocks ahead of the change out is obviously important to us. With a large footprint of that stockpile capacity, we have the ability to do that. Having said that, we've been railing, you know, at some pretty extraordinary rates, I have to say. So for instance, in March, we've done, I think, about 2.1 through the month of March, which is quite extraordinary. So certainly the line's proving that it's got the capacity to be able to do these sorts of things. So yeah, look, we've got to pedal hard, but as I said, each of these open cuts are going well. Werris will throw off more tons than what it has during the course of the year in this last quarter, as it does when it gets to the deeper sections and gets to the F&G scene in particular. Maules is performing really well, so we expect outperformance in Maules, and we, as I said in the as we paraded through the report, we actually expect this quarter to be running a little harder than the 8.5 million tonnes capacity that we've got there at the moment. So we expect to put some more coal on the ground, but all the stocks, as you mentioned, are really available for access. So if we're able to get them down to the port, which, as I say, the line is proving to us that we can certainly do that at will, that's great. And as far as sales go, you know, we're fully sold anyway for the last quarter, so that will happen. It's just a matter of making sure that we execute and that there's nothing anomalous that occurs in the supply chain between here and then. Jamie,
Split on the stocks of the 1.7 million tonnes of coal stocks at period end. Obviously, it will vary, but depending on stockpile capacity at each mine, but roughly what percentage is ROM stocks of that?
It's about 500,000, half a million ROM.
Did you get that?
Half a million tonnes of ROM.
Okay. Half a million?
Yep. Okay. All right, that's good. Second question, guys, on PCI and semi-soft pricing. So you've had a bit of a bump. You're indicating a bit of a bump for the June quarter on the back of the increase in met coal pricing. But just curious about how you see this market evolving if met coal prices improve further, because you sell, and if I'm wrong, majority of PCI to India. Yet you look at blast furnaces at the moment, not really pushing for efficiencies, right? So they're, which is when PCI and semi-soft, particularly PCI, I should say, is really used as, you know, the injection at the bottom of the blast furnace. So just curious about, do you think that that PCI and semi-soft pricing will actually track met coal pricing going forward? Thanks.
Well, certainly we've been waiting for a bit of adjustment, Paul, just on semi-soft, and like I say, we've seen it now, and when I say we've been waiting for it, because all the conversations with our customers had been about them trying to use more semi-soft, and that really is just a cost reduction initiative, as you say, as people aren't pushing, you know, coke ovens hard, you know, they've been more focused on saving a buck or two per tonne. And that's been to the benefit of our sales of semi-soft. The obviously added benefit that we've achieved in more recent times is the realisation of a better specification for our semi-soft coal, so people aren't buying it as much for its low sulphur, low ash attributes, but they're actually buying it for that plus the better coking properties that it's got. So that's seen demand increase. In fact, we're probably double our forward sales, and this is obviously not just for the back end of the year, but for spilling into next year. We're probably double our forward sales as to where we thought we might be with the met coal sales out of Maules in particular, based on our 5-year ramp up to 50%. So that's certainly looking very positive, but we will see it continue to track the improvement in met coal pricing as this price improvement continues to develop.
All right, and then last question, if I may, just on thermal pricing. So you looks like you achieved a 2% premium over the Newcastle index for the period. So you got an 8% premium for Maules, you got a 4% premium for Narrabri. So again, this indicates that I know you've stated in the past, but you just clarify, but what sort of discount the other open cuts are achieving in that case?
Yeah, I was going to say, it's not a simultaneous equation, so look, anything, obviously, you can see the observed price that we're selling into Korea, where we sell Korean tonnes. Those tonnes have been going in anywhere between, more recently, $44 to $46. If you happen to be unfortunate enough to sell any coal to markets other than that, which we tend to try and avoid, those numbers are pretty horrific. They're like $38, but fortunately we're not in the business of doing that. So you can see that there's a blended outcome that goes there. Having said that, the Korean sales, as far as our business goes, last year was the high water mark in terms of the volume of coals that we sold to that market. And in fact, as Narrabri and Maules move forward and ramp even further, the average calorific value of our portfolio moves us even further away from that market. So I think this year you'll probably see us, and I'm just thinking round numbers, about the high water mark was about 3 million tonnes. When we're really deep into the Korean market there, but now you'll see us around about the 2 to 2.4 market for Korean tonnes. So with that number, you'll be able to back solve there.
Yeah, that's very useful. Explains it. Thanks.
And as one final reminder, if you wish to ask a question, you need to press 0 followed by 1 and wait for your name to be announced. And you have a follow-up question from Peter O'Connor from Shaw Partners. Please go ahead.
Paul, your comment in the release piqued my interest about buyers showing interest for thermal coal contracts, particularly we're living in a world where everybody seems to dislike thermal coal and tells us nobody wants it. Can you shed some light on where they come from, what they're showing interest in, and how long a term of contract, and et cetera?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, no, happy to talk about that. It's a very buoyant part of our business at the moment, which is nice. Contrary to what everybody, in inverted commas, I'm waving my fingers here around that term, would have you believe. Clearly, everybody is probably more better defined by the media as opposed to what our neighbours are doing to the north of us. And I know we've said this before, and I know we've had these conversations before, Peter, and that is that every customer you go to see up there on the thermal side of our business is expanding, every one of them. There's not a single one of them that's in retreat. They've all got growing energy demands. They've all got changing markets. And they're all, where they're growing, they're all deploying the best quality technology they can. So the vast majority for us as an organisation, in terms of our exposure to this increased demand, is because of the deployment of ultra-supercritical power station technology. Now that drives an even richer blend than what we've seen in the past, and as you know, with the Isogo plant, say for instance, just as a good case in point, that ratio is 2 of our tonnes to 1, low ash, low sulphur Indo-tonne. And the more and more we see of this, the more and more that technology rolled out, the more and more demand we see. So what we are seeing is actually our customers are saying to us, look, I've got these power stations coming on anywhere between next year and, in 5 years, say, for instance, for the purpose of this discussion. And they're saying, I'm really quite concerned about where I'm going to get the quality coal to be able to feed this new power station. So for us, that's good. All these discussions are, as you would well accept, happening in still an oversupplied market. So the fact that we're even talking about premiums in a market that's oversupplied, you know, goes to that underlying demand for the quality side of the coal market. So you know, when you're getting 8%, you know, premiums for malls, that's certainly indicative of the fact that people prize that coal and want to try and sign things up. The trial shipments that we've been doing with new customers have all gone very, very well. And generally what they're talking in terms of a contracting horizon at this point in time is about 3 years. So we signed some nice 3-year deals up, you know, for sort of anywhere between 500,000 to 750,000 tonnes with new customers, which has been pretty solid. You know, we brought a lot of tonnes to market, and to have a sold out position, you know, for this year is very, very good. The proportion of unsold in the balance of this quarter, this calendar year, is pretty minimal. So that gives us the confidence to push ahead. As I say, the media will say one thing, but when you speak to our customers and you look at the business development activities that they're going through, I mean, it's a very physical thing. You can't ignore the fact that they're constructing power stations. You know, it takes a while for them obviously to come together, but they're building them, and we stand here, you know, in a really good position to be able to meet that demand.
Well, what is the country mix of those customers, and what is the pricing basis you're contracting at?
Look, the pricing, well, the country basis certainly is over 50% of our product goes into Japan. There's no doubt about that. That's going to grow. But at the same time, I talked a little bit earlier just about Korea. Korea's been hit pretty hard price-wise, and we've tended to stay away from that market, I have to say. Our exposure to Taiwan is growing. That's been very good business for us. But the Korea will still be a couple of million tonnes a year type thing in the new financial year. The basis of pricing for us, as I say earlier, is always about a premium for our Skoda or better coals, and that's certainly the right place to start. We think Gunnedah Basin over time will essentially have its own pricing framework. But there's not enough depth for coal in the market to be able to have a separate index for it. But you essentially get there by saying, well, my conversation might be about the JPU pricing for some of those tonnes, but others where it's GCNU, could all be about GCNU plus here's my premium floor that I expect for my quality. So we're certainly having the right discussions. People recognise the quality, know they have to pay a premium. It's all about the negotiations about what that final premium looks like.
Can I revert back to the M&A question, but flip it on its head, and ask you, given the level of M&A that's out there, and more importantly, given the level of interest there's been in some of these assets and some of the left-field buyers, have you had an increasing or different range of interest shown in Vickery in recent months?
No, same people, I would say, same caliber of people. We're not seeing the, like you say, the unusual players as we've seen one or two assets trade with now. No, it's really been the people looking for the long-term security of supply. That the profile, if you like, of that group hasn't changed at all. It's been all about, quite frankly, it's been all about the Japanese market. You know, they've got a massive build-out of power stations coming. There's an impending shortage. Every coal trader in Japan, you know, is very, very focused on the fact that there's, you know, going to be emerging demand out of these new power stations that needs to be fed. And, many of them turn up at our door looking to have a conversation around Vickery. Our drive is obviously to align ourselves with end users, as you know, but the interest levels have been very good.
And this is a big resource. It's a big resource without anyone with their foot on it outside of Whitehaven.
And can I just one follow-up, Paul? Cost trend, just a hypothetical. Given where you're tracking at $56 for the second half is your guidance, and thinking through the next 1, 2, 3 years, Maules goes from 8 to 13.5. Narrabri with the expansion of the longwall goes up 700,000 tonnes. Just by a pure economies of scale basis, your costs move lower. You know, should I be thinking in mid-low 50s as a medium-term objective, just on that basis?
Well, certainly, I'm glad you at least didn't say that was short-term, because I'd say no. Medium-term, you know, clearly we have aspirations to bring the cost down even further. All those things you point to, I'm glad you picked them all up because they're real and we feel that we should be people's expectations should be focused on that. Certainly ours are internally. The one thing I would just note that does counter this to some degree, but you do it for good reasons, is the increase in metallurgical coal output. So that market is very prospective for us. You know, even at today's, you know, these newly settled prices, say, for instance, even at today's currency, the margin for us in our semi-soft out of Morse is twice the thermal. So it's really good business for us. So as we continue to drive hard and push the semi-soft ramp up even further, obviously that means a bit more washing. And that brings a little bit of extra cost, you know, and you've obviously got to pay for the yield loss. But as I say, the margins double even at today's prices, so you're incented to do that. So that's the, if you're only looking at the cost line, I just caution you that more washing means a little bit more cost, but it also means more margin if you're looking both the revenue and the cost. So that's the only thing I think which goes against that trend into the medium term as you describe.
That's perfect. Thank you very much, Paul.
And your next question will come from the line of Owen Beryl from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Hi, Paul. Just one quick question from me about the your above rail agreements. There's been a lot of talk about take or pay on the ports, but I'm just wondering in terms of your rail haulage, you know, you're forecasting sort of current guidance of around about sort of 22, 23 million tonnes of saleable production in FY17. I'm just wondering how much of that is contracted, and are you able to give me any colour around, you know, between which carriers and how much of that is under take or pay?
Owen, yeah, look, all of it's contracted. We've got arrangements in place for all of it. There is a little bit of a change in our mix. We've taken a bit more short-term capacity versus long-term capacity. As we do ramp up, we just think that flexibility is good for our business. We've seen good efficiencies come out of both contracts with both players, and we're pretty evenly spread at the moment across those two, although Aurizon certainly benefits a little bit more from further Maules tons. So our game has all been about maximising the contractual position that we've got. So if you buy 10 million tonnes, then use all the 10 million tonnes. You've got to buy it to cover the surge capacity from, you know, from peakiness from a longwall mine, say, for instance, that generates from time to time. But say, for instance, our project to expand the footprint of the stockpile capacity at Narrabri allows us to manage the peakiness of the longwall performance a lot better and be able to smooth out, therefore, our deliveries and better match the underlying deliveries with the contracted tonnage position. And where we bust through that limit, then we've been taking spot capacity off the market to move extra tonnes, which has turned out to be, you know, in a market that's, you know, generally not under a lot of pressure to deliver more tonnes. There's spare trains around, and then we can do that quite competitively.
So how much is covered under long-term then at the moment?
Oh, look, I would say we have the capacity to do most of that under long-term arrangements. It's really okay. The spot, the peakiness, as I mentioned, once a month that we cover with spot trains.
And I think previously you stated that the majority of Maules has been covered by Aurizon, so that'll obviously skew your contracts towards that direction once Maules is fully ramped up.
Yeah, look, that's true, but we're really indifferent in some ways to how we to who we use now, because you'll recall the chronology of this is that both pitched for the Maules Creek deal, Aurizon got it, but we circled back around to PN and did a deal with them to essentially put them on the same footing as Aurizon with the larger train sets. And so that sees us being able to achieve savings out of both contracts, which we otherwise wouldn't have been able to see. Having said that, both those companies are pretty flexibly minded at the moment, and you know, we want to be able to draw on both of them from any load point at any point in time. We don't want them actually restricted to one site only, and so that's the type of flexibility we've been able to bring to both those contracts now.
Oh, so you're not actually tied to the mine, to the carrier. You can basically move it.
Yeah, no, we have the capacity to deploy them across our group.
Okay, fantastic.
And at this time, there appears to be no further questions. Thank you.
All right, operator, we'll close it there. I mean, of course, anyone can, if they've got any follow-up questions, know where to find us. But thanks once again for dialing in, and we look forward to catching up with you individually over the next 3 months as we bring home the final quarter of this year. Thanks for your time.